Well, good evening, everyone. We had a preacher here 2 weeks ago who said this was the hottest church he'd ever preached in. I wasn't quite sure what he was alluding to, the aesthetic quality of some of our young people or not, but I think it was just generally the heat. Please don't sit there and suffer. I'm not going to talk for more than an hour. There's 10 minutes. There is water available by the main doors, and please do get up and get yourself a drink. What an amazing evening. And what six wonderful people who told their individual stories of the goodness of God working in their life and bringing about transformation. It really was a privilege to listen to you all, and thank you so much for having the courage and obedience to God to do that. You really blessed us this evening. There's so much that I could pick up from what has been shared, and I was intending to pick up a lot of it, but I'm just going to make two little illustrations. And then we're going to sing our final song, and after that, there'll be an opportunity for you to respond to what you've seen and heard and experienced this evening. It may well be that you've sat here this evening and thought, well, that was one of the weirdest evenings I've had in a long time. But it may be that you've come here this evening and thought, I finally feel at home. And all these questions and all these searchings and all these life experiences are being brought together and somehow are making sense this evening in the presence of these people and in the presence of God. And we believe that God is speaking to some of you. And this evening he's calling you to follow him. And he's inviting you, like these baptism candidates, to give your life to him and to say, from now on, I'm going to follow you, live for you, and live with you. But what I want to pick up this evening from what was shared, many of the testimonies spoke about their sense of guilt, the sense of shame, the sense that things were messed up in their life and they felt distant from God and uncomfortable with themselves, where they'd come from, where they were, and where they thought they were going. And that is a universal feeling. Every religion is predicated upon this understanding that there is a God and he is good, but he's also holy. And in his holiness, he must somehow distance himself from sinfulness. And every religion recognizes that as humans, we sin, we really mess up, and that damages us, that damages those around us, that damages our environment, and that damages our relationship with God. It brings about a rift, a gulf, a chasm between us and him. For many people, they're aware that there is a God, but he seems pie in the sky when they die. There is a distance, and that distance is caused because of this that the Bible calls sin. But it's our wrongdoing, and our wrongdoing is our undoing. We've heard this evening from these testimonies that the God who seemed distant, the God who they were aware was pure, the God that they longed for but didn't feel good enough for, was the God who was moving towards them. And that he wasn't moving towards them in anger and wrath and wanting to judge them, but he was moving towards them wanting to embrace them and to love them and to heal them and to restore them and to put right what was wrong in their life. That they, because of their life, had created a gulf, but God, because of his love, wanted to bridge that. And that was eloquently and powerfully repeated in different ways throughout those testimonies. And here's the thing, it's not just for them, it's for all of us. That same God beckons us this evening in love and wants to draw us to himself and wants to deal with those things that are in our life that have messed us up and separated us from him. And he wants to cleanse us and forgive us and restore us and embrace us and do life together with us. A while ago, I was doing a conference up north in Yorkshire. And there were a number of people at this conference, but I, believe it or not, was the speaker. And yet after every talk, people would suddenly sort of all move over to sort of gather around this one particular person. And I watched this over several days, finding it interesting. What was it about this person that people saw and were attracted to and wooed to and drawn to? She was, let's say, a late middle-aged lady. And it was clear that she had a joy about her. She had a sense of the presence of God. That's the only way I can describe it about her. She looked amazing. And people, like a magnet, were somehow inexorably drawn to her. Some of you will have been around Christians and you've been drawn. Some of you might have been repulsed by some of them, but drawn to them. There's something about them. It's as if God shines out of every pore. And after a few days, I went to talk to this woman and I said, "Tell me your story." And she said, "Well, I'm here because I'm now working for the diocese in Manchester. But I've only been a Christian." In fact, she was early 60s. She said, "I've been a Christian about 5 years. And she said, "For most of my life, I've lived in torment, overwhelmed by a sense of shame and guilt and fear and a dread of God that he was going to get me. I didn't know him, but my sense of him was he was angry with me." We heard that in one of the testimonies this evening, that he was angry with me and he was out to get me. She explained that as a young woman in her late teens, she had done something, I don't know what it was, but she had done something that she felt put her forever on the wrong side of God. And that God could never, ever forgive her for it. But instead, he was going to judge her, he was out to get her. And then she was going to spend eternity separated from him. She told me that she'd married a Roman Catholic who had a particular view of the nature of the sin that she'd committed that meant she could not be forgiven. Very helpful. She told me that for years, whenever they were on holiday or visiting a town, if there was a church and the door was open, she would go in and she would pray. And if no one was in there, she would go to the front and kneel down and pray to the God she didn't know and pray to the God that she was terrified before and ask him somehow to deal and to forgive this sin in her life from the past that hounded her every day of her present. One day she said she was driving to the supermarket. And into her mind came a word and some numbers. She wasn't at all religious. There wasn't an ounce of religion in her. But in came this reference. She did her shopping, and the reference was Romans 3:23. She said, "What is that?" She was telling me this. She then went home. There it is in her head, Romans 3:23. She got home and she thought, "I wonder, that sounds a bit religious. I wonder if that's in the Bible." Anyway, she hunted out the old family Bible and she blew off the dust and she went to the beginning like all clever people and found an index and there it said Romans. She found a page number and she turned to it. Let me read to you what she read on that occasion. "All have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God." As she read that, she couldn't believe it. Bingo! That articulated exactly her experience, exactly what she knew about herself, what she felt. She had sinned. That's what it's called. That's what she'd done. And the consequence of it was that they'd fallen short of God's glory. No wonder she felt so miserable. No wonder she felt so lost. No wonder she felt that everything was unraveling. She was made to be in the presence of God, with God, like God, in the glory of God. But because of her sin, she had actually been pushed away from him, or walked away. And the verse went on, and are justified freely by his grace. Justified, that's just a religious word, but what does it mean? It means put right, just as if I'd never sinned. Acquitted, declared innocent, free to go, cleared of all charges, are justified, made just and right and righteous before God. How? Freely, by his free gift. She couldn't earn it, merit it. She didn't need to do anything. Our first testimony talked about that. She didn't have to work hard. She didn't have to pray hard. She didn't have to give hard. She didn't have to be religious. She didn't have to walk around herself 7 times or walk around the world on her knees or something. She didn't have to do anything. She could be justified freely as a gift of God's grace. And this was through, it says, the redemption. Redemption means being bought out of debt or brought out of slavery. This is redemption, comes through Jesus Christ, it says. And then it goes on to talk about the way God presented Jesus as a sacrifice of atonement through faith in his blood. And she realized that God did for her what she couldn't do for herself. And when she was powerless to put herself right, God put her right. And she couldn't move towards God, but God had moved towards her. And she couldn't clean up her own sin, but God had cleaned it up. And here in this mystery and marvel, God's eternal Son becomes flesh, Jesus Christ, and goes to the cross. And there he takes the punishment freely and willingly and volitionally and in love for all our sins. And he dies the death we deserve. And then he rose again. She understood this all as she read it. And that by putting her faith, that simply means belief and trust, by holding on to Jesus, that his death and the benefits of that are applied to her. And she could be forgiven and set free and made fulfilled and brought into life with God. What an extraordinary thing. And there she was, 5 years later, working for the church in Manchester, telling people about God. She was a life transformed. And 5 years on, she was still fizzing with the goodness of God. And everyone saw it and wanted a bit of it. They didn't want to talk to this fat old vicar after the talks. They wanted to talk to her. That is an objective truth that became hers. And that is an objective truth that can become yours. If you, like her, like the sixth this evening, put your faith in Jesus and say, I want that too. And I want to say yes to your yes to me. And I want you to forgive me. And I put my trust in you. You know, there are over 2 billion Christians in the world. I mean, statistics aren't everything. There are over 2 billion people with intestinal worms. So, you know. But why are people Christians? I mean, a few are born into it and stick with it. But generally, people are Christians because they know that there is a God. They know that they want to be with God. They know they're separated from God. And they want to be right with him. And they've heard that he loves them, that he's for them, that he wants to be with them, that in his son he died for them, and all they have to do is come to him and believe in him and trust in him and receive that forgiveness and be brought into his family. What an extraordinary thing. There isn't another offer like that in the universe today. But it didn't come cheap. It came at a great cost, and I've already mentioned that Jesus died for our sins. In fact, St. Paul here says God presented Jesus as a sacrifice of atonement that is ours through faith in his blood. A good pal of mine was with the SAS, the Special Air Service, for 17 years. Before that, 5 as a para, and now he does various other interesting things. He's a Christian man, but he told me about something that happened over 10 years ago now in Sierra Leone. The group that he had trained in the SAS were sent in to rescue some British soldiers who were being held captive. And the helicopters went in, they located where the captives were, they went in at night, and they had a firefight, and they went in to rescue these prisoners. They found the cells, they blew off the doors and the locks that were barring. And the SAS trooper stands there, and there in the cell are these soldiers, but they've just been so traumatized by their captors that they're cowering. And the SAS soldier, the trooper, says to them, "We are here to rescue you, but you must come with us now. We're here to rescue you, but you've got to come with us." They came to their senses, they got up, and they followed the troopers out. And they made their way to the Chinook helicopters. As they were doing that, one of the troopers who'd rescued them was shot. High velocity round, was dead before he hit the floor. They got the captives into the Chinook helicopter, and then the SAS put this dead trooper at the back. And you'll know that with these Chinook helicopters, 2 rotors, the rear one lifts up the back first. And as it lifted up, the captors who had been set free are all in the front. The dead man's in the back. His blood ran all the way down and surrounded their feet of those who'd been rescued. And my friend Mark in the SAS said to me, they knew the price of their freedom. They knew the price of their freedom. We can know God. We can be at peace with God. We can be forgiven by God. We can have life with God. We can spend forever with God if we put our faith in him. But it came at a great cost, even the death of his son, Jesus Christ, for us, by faith in his blood. Why would he do that? Why would he go to such lengths for us? The answer is because he couldn't conceive of an eternity without us. He made us like him. He made us for him. And he came to our rescue. And he died to give us life. And then Jesus was raised again. And his wounds, as it were, sealed. And that was God's yes to what Jesus had done for us. His yes to us. And we need to say yes to him. Matthew, in his testimony, said, God is fighting for you. God is fighting for you. And he fought to his death at the cross in order to give you love. Because he loved you. And the question, the challenge, the wonderful invitation for us this evening is, will we say yes to his yes? Will we say yes to his yes? We're going to sing our final song. I'd like to invite the band up. And then after this, we're going to give you an opportunity to say yes to his yes to us. If you feel that you're ready to do that. There'll be some other things, and then we'll have a prayer and have a drink and a snack. But for some of you tonight, you know tonight's the night to say yes to the God who says yes to me, and to put your faith in him who shed his blood in love for us. Let's stand.